All right, money and identity. All right, we done talked about that. We talked about that. All right. I want you to read that statement carefully. He who does what? For money will end up losing? Think about what you do. If you hate what you do for a living, you're effectively trading your identity for the money they pay you. And in the process, you've lost who you are. So, how much money have you made in your life? That's a good question. So most of you are working class, right? So here's how you work out. You want to find out system. How much money have you made in your life? It's simple. Go back to your records. Look at your tax returns since you started working. Right. Add that up. It tells you how much money you've made in your entire life. And when you've found out how much money you've made in your life, the next thing is, what have you got to show for it? And I'm willing to bet that most of us, debt. Most of us, we've made lots of money. And what we have to show is what? Debt. And a bit of this. Can you see that? One of my favorite slide. And so, let me explain that to you. It gives you, so you see, normally I'd say to people, I'm prophetic. I stopped doing that after some mothers cried and I realized this is not good. So I was talking to a group of women at Denel and I said to them, you know, I can tell you how many hours you got left to live. And people, of course, you tell them that, they say, nah, no ways. I said, no, seriously. And if you, whoever's got a guts, lift up your hand and I'll come and I'll tell you how many years you got left to live. And so the three people, there's always like three people who think, ah, no, he's bluffing. So the three ladies put their hands up and I came here and I hold their hand and I put my... Now she's curious. What's that? I said, how many children have you got? How old are they? No, you need to come and see me after the session. Go to the next one. By the time I go to the third one, the first one was crying. Because she thought she was going to die and leave her children behind. So I stopped doing that. And I said, no man, I can't tell how long you got left to live. But this is based on life expectancy. So I'm 52 years old. If you look at that, 52 years old, we got 50. So I can use 50 as a number. So if I was 50 years old, I'm left with 246,000 hours to live. Okay? So I'm 52. A year is 8,760 hours. That's how many hours in a year. So now, if you want to calculate how many hours you got left, so I'm 52, and so it's 2 years more, so I add the 16,000 hours. I subtract 16,000 hours. I don't have a pointer, so I'll show you now. And I can send you the slides, by the way. My slides, I can send, no, in fact, they've got them there. If you want copies of the slides, please take them, plagiarize them, use them. I don't care. There's nothing new under the sun. So, we take that, and we subtract, because I'm older, we would subtract the 16,000 hours from this, which means it's 246 minus 16,000, so that's 230,000. So effectively, I'm left with 230,000 hours left to live. Now, why this is important, so what you do, you take this, and you go buy yourself a stopwatch. A very big stopwatch. Right? Now you put your... Yes. Then you put it on the wall. So every morning when your alarm goes, you look and you can see your life going. How many of you are going to have problems waking up? Not a single one. Because most of us will only start to truly live when we realize that we're going to die. And it's an interesting thing because if how many of you now, you know, how many of you actually think you're going to die? Be honest. I mean, the last time you went to a funeral, you looked at that casket and thought, man, I'm going to die. Most people don't think that. They are looking and say, ah, shame, he died, he was so young, man. You never think it's going to happen to you. And because of that, you really don't use your time the way you should be using your time. So the idea behind this is, so if you don't like that idea, then just go and buy yourself marbles. So you change that from hours to days. Okay, you can so just multiply a day is 24 hours. So you can divide that by 24. It gives you the number of days you got left to live. Then you buy a whole bag of marbles. You know, ladies have got that thing. I don't know. They call it a table. Whatever they call that thing on the side in the corridor where you put a vase on, you know? Yeah. So you put the one full of marbles and the other one empty. So every morning when you leave your room and you walk down the corridor, you pick one marble, you put it there. Reminding you that this day is gone forever. Now let me tell you what's going to happen in your life when you do that. You're going to start to live your life with intensity. You will never leave the house without kissing your wife or your children because you had a fight. Because you recognize that this could be the last time that you see them. You see, awareness of your mortality helps you to figure out what's important and what's not important. Now, if you're a married person, you know what I'm talking about. You know, you all have that week of silence. You know that week of silence? Now, don't pretend like you don't. If I ask your kids, they'll tell me about it. You know the week of silence? That's when you meet in the corner. Then you get to where you are dropping off at work. And of course, you wake up in the morning and you're coming to church on a Sunday. This is where the kids are traumatized. Because you haven't been talking for a week. Now you're going to church. It's silence even in the car. The moment you hit that door, you grab your wife's hand. God is good, brother, all the time. The poor kids are thinking, huh? So mortality. So I put that for mortality. And all I'm trying to ask you is that, please, live with the reality of the fact that you're not going to live forever. So I come here to spend my Saturday morning with you guys. I recognize that I'm spending my limited life hours. I don't have forever. So when I chose to come and spend this time with you, I'm trading my limited life hours to impact your own lives. Do you get the picture now? So this is where it gets interesting now. So now, when you get home today, guys, you need to work out how much you are trading 1 hour of your life when you go to work in the morning. So this is what you do. If you make 10,000 rands a month, in other words, 10,000 rands a month hits your bank account every month end. So you take that 10,000 rands, right? You work an average about 200 hours a month. So you take your 10,000 divided by 200 hours, and it gives you a lousy 50 bucks. So effectively, you are trading 1 hour of your limited life hours for a lousy 50 rand. You can't even buy a Nando's, have a chicken meal with that.
Sure.
Then the question I ask, given your irresistible difference, given the talents you've been given, is that all that you are worth? Oh, this is powerful. I'll send the calculation so that you can do. That's all you do. Take the amount of money that's going to your bank account. Divided by the number of hours that you work a month. And most of you are going to find that you're selling your life short. Then, most of us like to buy things. We work for peanuts and we want to buy expensive stuff. So now, the example I use, the guy is trading 1 hour of his life for 50 rand. Then, you go and buy, if you're a darky, you know, darky likes shoes. So I have to be careful. When I'm talking to darkies, I need to make sure the shoe is right. Otherwise, they won't listen to you. They'll be looking at your shoe. So now, you go to the shop and you buy a shoe for 2,000 rands. See, that only cost me 2,000 rands. But your trading rate is what? 50 rand an hour. So you take the 2,000 rands, divide it by the 50 rand, and suddenly you discover something that's very interesting. What's 2,000 divided by 50? 40, is it? So your shoes did not cost you 2,000 rands. They cost you 40 hours of your life. Now let's talk to the men and their fancy gadgets. That piece of metal junk with the BMW sign on it. So you take your car, Dav, which cost you 500,000 rands. And you divide that by your trading rate. Some of you are going to discover that you are giving more than half of your life to a piece of metal junk with a BMW or Mercedes sign on it. And when your child says, "Daddy, can you come and play soccer with me?" What do you say? "No, Daddy can't do that because Daddy is working." Why is Daddy working? Because Daddy needs to afford the piece of metal junk with the BMW sign on it.
Wow.
Gives you priority.
Wow.
Priority. Where is your priority in life? This is stuff that's really important to think about. Let's go. Let's move. Right. Let me share with you the African village wealth model. And then we're going to... So, investment. Let me see. How many of you are in... Okay, maybe it's unfair. Because now you won't want to show... How many of you are actually investing? If you are putting money away as an investment, put your hand up. Let's see. Don't be shy. How many of you who are investing actually got money in a fixed deposit? Oh, come on. Indians love those fixed deposits. Oh, yes. That one I know very well. What's my guarantee? It's an Indian thing about guarantees. So, are you worried if you tell me you got money in a fixed deposit, I'm going to pick on you? Okay, let me tell you the story. So, number one, if you got money in a fixed deposit, it ends today. So, 30 days. You got 30 days. Yeah, 30 days. You go and give notice on Monday. And you take your money out of there. You can put it somewhere else with the same little risk, and you make more money. Because if you got money in a 32-day notice now, you're probably getting, six is lucky. You're lucky if you're getting six. You're probably getting about four. What is inflation in this country? Not in Gauteng. Yeah, unless you're not paying for the toll gates.
Oh.
Even if you just take the price of fuel, our inflation is probably somewhere around 11-12%. It's the number that the government puts there to make you feel good, but the reality is it's costing you more. So now you take the money that you give all your life. I mean, you've given so much life to put this money. You go and give it to the bank. The bank says they'll give you 4%. Let's just be nice and say inflation is a 6%. It would be nice.
Okay.
It's a 6%. Then they take that money that they gave to you, that they've taken from you, and they're giving you 4%. Then they go and invest this money with Alan Gray. And they've just received 15%. Then they come and give you your 4%, and they take 11%. That's highway robbery. One of the things that we don't do, we don't spend time trying to understand investments. So one of the challenges I'm going to give you is that it's not enough to make a living and make money. It's the next leg that's important, is what do you do with the money that you make? You've got to invest your money so that while you are sleeping, the money is now working for you. But if you put the money in so you got the money in a 4%. So that means the 50,000 rands that you gave the bank, when you get it back after a year, it has lost value. In other words, you can no longer, so if 50,000 rands could buy you, I don't know, a lounge suite, in a year's time, that lounge suite is going to cost you 60,000 rands. But the bank has not given you enough interest to maintain the value of your money. So you've actually lost money.
Right.
Do you get the picture?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you've got money sitting in a fixed deposit, you need to go and see that person and say, "What's my interest?" Then look at them and say, what is inflation?
Right.
And then so if you're afraid of risks, you can go and I'm going to talk about a unit trust. You can go and look for a unit trust. I spend a lot of time in Alan Gray, so I know how good they are. So normally when I talk about investors, I talk about them, but they're not the only ones. One of the things I always challenge people to do, find someone who's a specialist on investments. Even if you have to pay them for their time, so that they can explain this thing so you get a better understanding. Because where we are losing is what we do with the money that we make. Had I known what I know today, when I got retrenched in 2005, instead of being on debt, end up with a debt of 2.5 million rands, I'd have ended up with 200 million rand, I mean 2 million rands. Give you an example. So I bought a Range Rover. Remember that Range Rover of mine? So I bought this Range Rover, And when I joined Alan Gray, one of the portfolio managers calls me and says, "Oh, Max, I hear you drive a Range Rover. How many of you know already, every time I saw that car, I wanted to kick it?" If you ever bought a new car, you know what I'm talking about. You enjoy it for 3 months. After 3 months, you can't justify what you're paying for that. Oh, come on, guys, let's be real. Those of you who spend money on cars, you know what I'm talking about. So I'm driving this 1 million rand car. For what? So now I sit with this guy, and he says, "What was the deposit?" He inputs that, right? How much did you pay every month? Your insurance? How many years you've been paying for? He's inputting this amount into the performance of Alan Gray over the same period. He turns the computer around. I almost fell off my chair. Had I not bought that Range Rover, and I had I didn't need the Range Rover, by the way. I didn't. But I only you only discover that it's vanity afterwards. Right. Had I not bought that car and I'd invested that money, when I got retrenched, I would have had enough cash to buy 2.5 Range Rovers for cash.
My God.
I was a fool. And a fool and his money are soon parted. I'm a living witness of that statement. I would have been a multi-millionaire over had I known what I know today then. Because I look at the man, I used to change cars every 18 months. Literally. And you know, you buy the cars with the residual. Some of you know what I'm talking about. You know that thing? You need Jesus if you're buying a car with the residual. In fact, now, Pastor, I've grown so much that I have no business buying a vehicle on hire purchase. See my old ML there. I waited until I had enough cash. I bought it as it was an 8-year-old car. Cost me 250,000 rands. I paid cash for it. And she runs very well. I go to Zim to visit my mother in the village, jump over the cliffs and whatever, and I'm okay. But you see, once I had defined who I was, I didn't need the trappings of life to define me. And so, but I realized I had to go through that because I would not be relevant as a speaker if I didn't have the experience and I was trying to talk to you about it. Some of you, when I talk about cars, you understand because most of us have wasted money in cars. Yes. So the youngsters here, you know, you want that GTI, eh? Yes. Okay. That GTI is a problem. The vrpa. We like that thing. Yes, it's a problem. If you, and I'm gonna show you a slide that will shock you. In fact, let me go there. Or let me talk about investment first, and I'll go to the slide, and then we'll talk about pain, and then we can go. Okay. So I grew up in the village, my initial years. And in an African village, at 6 years old, you start heading cattle. But you go with the older guys, so you're learning how to look after cattle. So by the time I was six, I was looking after the family wealth. Because my father never had a bank account. All his wealth was in those cattle. So I became a wealth manager for the family at the age of six. Some of you in the Indian community, you know, when I talk about the Indian community, you know the shops. You remember that when you were growing up, you probably went to a shop somewhere where the kid was standing on a crate of beer trying to...
Yes.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Say, no, this guy likes money, man. He's abusing the kids. What you are missing is that by the time that boy is 18, he knows everything about the retail business.
Yes.
He can start and compete with Pick and Pay. Yeah, yeah. While your child goes to UCT, gets an MBA, and waits for someone to come and look for a job for him. Sorry, guys. This is a fact of life. We have stopped making our kids work because we worked hard as young kids, didn't we? Our parents abused us. No, every time I go to the village, I tell my mother, "I'm not going to the field." She looks at me. I say, "I'll pay someone to go there." I say, "I was a child laborer. Now I'm retired." Because, I mean, in my time, man, it was rough. So my kids can't do jack. I mean, I don't know if you know, it's completely opposite. By 6 hours in the bush, I knew which berry you could eat. I knew how to look at the sky and think it's going to rain and start moving in the right direction. I knew to look where the cattle can graze. You know that if you don't know where the water is, all you need to do is when the cattle are thirsty, they will lead you there because they can smell what it is. I mean, if there was a tsunami today, I can still survive. And your kids that go to that sand pit that you're paying ₺2,500 a month for, because that's what they do today, isn't it? The little kids, we pay for crash. It's a very expensive sand pit, ₺2,500 a month.
Sand pit.
Yeah, it's a sand pit. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a sand pit.
You said like sand pit.
Oh, ah, come on, guys. You know English. You can imagine. I mean, the language came to Cape Town, came all the way up Limpopo. I mean, come on, guys. You know, one of the things. If you listen, the clip that he probably sent you a clip, right? Did you pick up the mistake there? I said, who you are determines. Yeah, determines. Then later you listen to yourself and think, what? These things happen. And we laugh at each other, but you know, when the French break the English language, we think it's cute and sexy. True. Anyway. So now, here's where I'm going. So from the age of 6 to 18, you looked at a kettle. Principle number one of the village wealth model. And it was true whether you're an African, Indian, or European. Because all of us at one point started off in a village somewhere. And the village wealth model, I call it the African village model, but it's actually the village wealth model. So your first years were spent learning about investment. You see, our forefathers were not investing in the stock market. They had literal real stock. So you invested in cattle. And so they understood that if you're going to succeed in life, you had to learn how to rear cattle. Are you getting the picture?
Yeah.
So by the time I was 18, I knew everything about raising cattle. No one could cheat me. So principle number one is get investment knowledge. Your kids will never succeed. You send them to school and you don't give them investment knowledge, they're going to take that money and spend it, and they'll end up in debt. Get investment knowledge. Don't just leave it with the conversation we have today. Pastor, it's important. So for churches, I say to pastors, bring investment specialists into the church. It's a tricky business because by bringing someone, you're not saying they should invest through them.
Right.
But you're trying to get your people to learn how to invest. Principle number two. So, and then I'll send you the principles as well. Principle number two. So, I spent the first, from 6 to 18, that's 12 years being trained on investment. The second principle here was this. At 18, you were free now to go into the city or to the mines to look for a job back in the day. So, you'd go there. Now, it was a principle that was understood that as an African boy, when you start working, your first paycheck belonged to your parents.
Right.
The interesting thing, it was the same principle from Cape to Cairo. And yet there was no internet.
Sure.
So how did that happen? Parents realized something, that when kids went into the city, they lost themselves. Literally. They had a nice time and whatever. Then they come back at 60. With what? A suitcase. No pension fund, coming home to the village to die. So they said, whoa, wait a minute. We need to do something. We're going to provide a pension fund. So they said, no, your first paycheck, you must send it to your family. So you would send your first paycheck to your family. They would buy the first cow. So it wasn't theirs. It was actually, it was a way of trying to force you to invest. So most people used to come to the city, you know, to this day, duckies, they go home in December. We don't know holiday is going home. Yeah, you know that thing, yeah. So yeah, they'll go home in December. Now remember, you reared all this cattle. You get there, you're dead. In the morning, you walk and you go to the cattle kraal, and your father show you. So you see, oh, that one has a calf, you know, all this stuff. And then there's this strange one you don't know. And he says, remember the money you sent us. This is your first cow.
Sure.
And he, he has another opportunity to talk to you about the importance of investing.
Wow.
So principle number two then. So principle number one, we said get investment knowledge, right? In other words, don't invest in things you don't understand. If you did cryptocurrency, you are now in trouble. Now you're probably praying in tongues trying to get your money back. Sorry, if you put money in crypto, you are praying. And I used to tell people, you know, these crypto guys tried to get me because I speak very well. They want me to go and talk about Bitcoin and whatever. And I said, no, I cannot recommend something I don't understand. No, Max, you're missing an opportunity. I said, this thing is too good to be true. And it is too good to be true. I know people who cash their entire pension fund. And as soon as they put that 2 million, that thing locked. No, real. Some put an additional bond on their houses. Boom, gone. This week, I understand, it also took another second dive. You can't come to someone and say, well, there's this system. Who built it? Petrovich. Who's Petrovich? He's in Moscow. Have you been to Moscow? No. So now if this thing does shut down, where am I going to go? I mean, logic, guys. You work very hard for your money. You can't just allow any Tom, Dick, and Harry to tell you what. The reason why this multi-level marketing works with people you know, the guys who are selling what they're selling, they want you to go to your friends and sell this thing. So I said to a group that came to ask me, Max, you know, somebody's presented this crypto thing to us, and we're thinking of doing this with our family members. I said, okay, so now I want you to picture your sister, your brother, your mother, and your grandmother. You've now just told them to put money in cryptocurrency. They've put their money there. Now you can't get the money out. And now they come to you because you were telling them this works. Now you're telling, no, but it's not me. It's because Andre told me that. And then Andre has moved. He's no longer in Pretoria. He's gone. You guys are laughing. This is real. I mean, yeah, because this Afrikaner guy who now just suddenly, you know.
Yeah, that's why we love.
People have been ripped off. It is actually quite sad. It is so sad. I mean, I know physically people who resigned so they could cash their pensions. And now, after 20 years of working, not one cent to your name. Man, you can become suicidal, man. Oh, but also there are some people who've done that and given the money to the pastor. Same thing.
Yeah,
some have taken a bond for a church. Guys, you can do a lot of things, but God says we must trust him. But he never said we must be foolish.
Sure.
Use your brain. And your spirit never lies to you. If I ask you to do something and this thing is saying no, listen to your spirit. Because every time you've gotten into trouble is when you didn't listen to that thing. You know you have a spirit that talks to you,
right? Yeah.
It's not only the pastor that the Holy Spirit is saying that. No, he's talking to you too. That's why if I'm speaking here, if it doesn't resonate with your spirit, discard it.
Right.
Your spirit will never mislead you. Anyway, so number one, get investment knowledge. Before you put your money into something, understand it. And the simple principle is this. If you cannot explain it to your 7-year-old, don't invest in it. It'll save you from a lot of heartaches. If you find you cannot explain it and you need to call me to explain it, there's a problem. An investment has to be so simple that it's easy to understand. Okay, so the money is going to go there. This is how it grows. And if there's a problem, this is where I might potentially have a problem. And so you understand it. So you're taking a calculated what? Because there's no investment with no risk, by the way. That would be a lie. Even your bank can go under. If you don't believe me, go to the guys who put money in VBS.
Right.
Yeah, even your bank can go down. But at least in South Africa, there are laws that protect your deposits. But if you gave it to Protasovic, never seen his picture, you got a computer. Say, put in there. Then they explain, no, currency is going to disappear. You know, they used to take this beautiful story. Man, I read enough fiction. I'm not interested. Anyway, so now, second thing is, this is important. Invest from your first paycheck. Invest from your first paycheck. Now, most of you finished your paycheck long time ago. So we're going to say, invest from your next paycheck. You can't eat the seed. See, I grew up in the village. We used to plant mealies. Those days, there were no seed companies. Or at least in the villages, anyway. So what we did, we grew our mealies, and then when you harvest, you take the best of the best. And he said, sir, that will be your seed for next season. You don't eat everything. So if you are receiving your salary and you're spending all of it, you need help. Okay? So invest from a first paycheck. So in our case, they forced you to buy a cow. Number three, notice now that they didn't buy an ox. They bought a cow. Translation principle number three, invest in a productive asset. Oh, it's being recorded, so you have it. So if you don't know, you're not in points, you can listen to it. Invest in a what? Productive asset. Those are villagers. They didn't go to school, but they understood the principle. Are you getting them? So what do you think our educated kids do these days? Get a first job, go to the bank, borrow some money, and buy a GTI. They're not even buying the GTI. Now, I want you to get this. You are mortgaging your future for a piece of metal junk with a VW sign on it. I want you to get this. You are saying, for the next 5 years, I'm going to be working for this car. Now, here's the funny thing. As you are working for it, the car is getting old. And it's a funny thing. By the time you've paid all this money, it's worth... To which my father says, I wasted my money sending you to school. Because my late father tried to get me to buy cattle. I said, no ways. Me, I'm not a villager. I'm educated. I'm not going to go to the village. I'm never going to... until I lost my job. And I thought, man, because when I lost my job, cows were like 10 grand. I mean, by the time, 20 years, I would have had 100 cattle. My life would have been totally different. Or had I been investing? Now, it's worse for me. I worked in the financial services company, and I was still chowing the money. Like, some of you are sitting here. It's not the first time you heard, oh, you mean I must invest? I didn't know. All of you know you should invest. But we keep saying we'll do it when? Tomorrow. And the reason why we don't invest is because we think we know how our lives are going to pan out. So I was moving up the corporate ladder. I had no reason to think that this thing is going to end. I was sure I was going to retire CEO of some fancy JC listed company. I mean, one of the few, you know, the telltale signs were there. Until I got retrenched. And then spent a whole year looking for a job and nothing was happening. And I wish I had what? Invested. Because life works this way, and it's all in the Bible, by the way. I'm not making this up. 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of hunger. It's the story of your life. If you can look at your life now, you've gone through 7 years of plenty. And you're going through 7 years of? That's how it is. And God gave you the formula. In the years of plenty, put some away. No, it was for Pharaoh. It's not for me. Now you are broke. You say, but Lord, why would you leave me? I was tired. Lord says, but I blessed you for a whole 7 years.
Sure.
7 years. So if you are working currently, you better start working on your costs, in reducing your costs and putting some money away, because you don't know how long you are going to be employed. Even if you are in business, because business will run for a season, and when its season ends, it vanishes. Oh, come on. How many companies do you know that have gone? They used to be there. But we never think that it will happen to
us.
It's like death. Everything comes to an end. Even this world is going to come to an end. So when you plan your life, you must plan with that in mind. That what would happen if I was out of a job for 2 years, for 3 years? It takes planning. And you see so what was the first one? Get investment knowledge. Second one, invest from a first paycheck. Third one, invest in a productive asset. They bought a cow because a cow is productive. Step number four. Now, a cow will give you a calf. All right? So, principle number four then says, your investment must give you interest. It's simple. In other words, your investment must be productive. Now, notice something. A cow never gives you half a calf. Or in your case, a quarter of a calf. 4% is half a calf. It must produce itself. Are you getting the picture? Yeah. Now the bank doesn't rip you off. And you say, I got some serious money. No, it's a rip-off. Now, if you're lucky, principle number five, if you're lucky, the calf is female. Which means after a couple of years, the calf gives you a calf. What do we call that? Compounding of interest. In other words, interest on interest. That's how the real key to making money is when your interest begins to generate interest. Are you with me? The villagers understood this thing. Sure. Number six. Now in the village, we kept our cattle in a kraal. Right? There are three reasons why we did that. Maybe two, I don't know. Number one, so most people ask them, so why did we keep cattle in a kraal? They say it's protection. Protection from what? They're animals, they live in the bush. Number one, organic farming. I know most of you think organic farming came with Woolworths, isn't it? Every African villager was an organic farmer. Don't be fooled by these guys now talking like they just discovered something new.
Right.
See, the problem we have in the world is that we don't write stuff down. Yeah. And because we don't write stuff down, those who write down seem like they've discovered it. They will take the same Indian principles and apply them. When they come from Harvard, it looks like it's special, but it was... I mean, okay. Anyway, so now, so the villagers figure out, if they keep cattle in the kraal, then they get the manure piling up. So after a whole year, the manure, so you start from zero, in a year, in the kraal, the manure is like this high. So if you go to the village around October, they're digging this manure and going to put it in the fields. For what? For organic farming. That's why we never suffered from the diseases we are suffering from today. Until they came up with that fertilizer stuff that's killing us.
Right.
Because if you eat their food, you get their diseases. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're not ready for this. Okay, so the first thing was you benefited from organic farming. The second one, we also didn't believe in messing up with the ozone layer. I mean, this thing of being, what's the word we use for climate friendly, whatever? Green. Yeah. The green economy. Every African village was a green economy. We didn't go into a tractor and blow diesel smoke into the atmosphere and kill our atmosphere. No. We used to yoke the oxen right. And plow. Oh, you don't understand how smart your culture was, right? So, we used to be plowing. The third thing is we need to milk the cows in the morning. You can't milk them if they're in the bush.
Sure.
So besides when you bought cattle, besides the value of the multiplication of the cattle, you got additional value, which is manure, the plowing, and the milk. If you didn't have cattle, you had to buy manure, you have to buy the milk, and you got to pay someone to plow with their tractor. So now, principle number six is the concept of dividends. Where's my accountant now? Where's your son? Where's the accountant? Where is he? Ah, there he is. So dividends, now when I say dividends, you say, that's deep. No, it's not. Dividends simply is additional income or additional interest for that matter. Now, this is very interesting because if you invest on the stock market, the companies that become the darling of the investment community are companies that declare dividends on a regular basis.
Okay, right.
So, the sixth point of the village wealth model says your investment must give you dividends. And then the final, which is the seventh one, speaks to how long should you be invested. And we go back to the village and say, how long did you keep cattle? The Zulus have a saying that I love so much. It says, "Ubuhle bendoda zinkomo zayo." The beauty of a man is in his assets. And all the women say it? Oh, come on, ladies. If you got money, man, you could be ugly. Doesn't matter. Money makes any man look gorgeous. So the Zulus have a saying that the beauty of a man is in his kettle. You get the picture? So you must be invested for as long as you are alive. And then your Bible says, a wise man leaves an inheritance, not for his children. Do you notice? Children's children. Man, that's a legacy. It spans more than one generation. I mean, most of us, our parents left us what? We were their retirement plan. And that's one of the challenges that we face, that we need to deal with. Because if by the time I die, my kids have to start from scratch, we as a people are never going to succeed. You have to build something that your kids can use as a stepping stone to build more so that your grandchildren can ever. Do you get the picture? So each generation becomes better. But if you have generation after generation starting from scratch, it's as good as if we never existed. What is the legacy that you're building? As you go to your job every day, in and out, the day they decided it's enough, they'll tell you goodbye. And if you come back to that office after 3 weeks, they don't even remember your name.
Correct.
And yet you've invested everything you have in somebody else's business. So, seven key principles of investment that we learned from the village. I even had a village there, you know. Can you believe that something like this can come out of something like that? There are the principles. He's got the presentation. So anyone, Jerome, you'll arrange. Anyone who wants it, you can email it to them. And when you've got this, if you're planning to do it somewhere and you want me to talk you through it, please do, and I'll... Because the point of the matter is this. Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun. I know we like to claim stuff. I learn from other people. Because all you have to do is take my stuff, put your irresistible difference to it, and you'll present it in a way that I live in, come and take notes. So I'm, guys, take it, use it, utilize it. Let's get this thing going so we can change the world. Does it make sense? Right, now the exciting things. Now, we don't invest in cows anymore, do we? Malema might just take it. So now you've got farming is a very risky business now. Thank you to the EFF. So now we don't invest in cows. The principles, though, remain. So instead of investing in stock, as in cattle, we're now investing on the stock market. Does it make sense? How many of you are investing on stock market at the moment? Come on, guys. Anyone with unit trust? Let me see. Unit trust investment? The church doesn't have a unit trust investment?
No.
Good. We're going to talk about that. I'm willing to sit down and talk about it. It's important. Because if you want to build surety, you've got to find a way of building wealth so that your organization becomes self-sufficient. Very important. But even families. You've got to build your way to a point where you don't need your salary. And it's possible. In fact, over a 10-year period, most of you should have gone to that place where you actually don't need your salary. So now we're putting money on the stock market. So what I'm trying to say is this. The best place to make money today is the stock market. Now, when I say that, most of you think, yeah, I'm going to lose my money, isn't it? And of course, the question I always ask people, I say, if you're afraid to lose money, what are you basing it on? Just think for a moment, who told you that you lose money in the stock market? Probably a guy who has never invested on the stock market. Isn't that interesting?
Right.
No, go look, just think in your mind when you think about it. Who told you nobody can say, I put money in the stock market and I lost money. No, I heard from an uncle of mine who's my drinking buddy. Do you get the picture? Then I asked the question, if my liver is giving me problems, I can never figure out where the liver is. Who's the doctor? Is it? Where is it? This side or that side? This. Okay, she says it's this side. So now let's say my liver is giving me problems. Now I go to Jerome and say, Jerome, my buddy, this liver, man, is got a pain. Can you just take a knife, open up, and let's check what's going on? Look at Pasiga. But look at this. When it comes to investments, do you know who you go ask for information? your broke friend. Think for a moment. You are having a discussion about investment with a guy who's always borrowing money from you. Okay, we need Jesus in this place. You get the picture? What am I trying to say? When my liver is giving me problems, I don't even go to my GP. I don't trust him.
Right.
I'm going to go to a specialist. But the money, you spend all of your life at work trying to make this money. Then you go to some teller at the bank. I got this 50 grand. What do you think? She says, no, put in a 32-day deposit. And you got to get it. It's nice. You got to get an interest of 4%. And you say, how much are you making, Miss Taylor? 5,000 rands. No wonder you're making 5,000 rand. Okay, believe that. Guys, I'm challenging you. This is challenging stuff because I'm asking you now. You need to look at yourself. If it applies to you, then God is saying it's time for a change. Time for a change. Think carefully about the things you do. Who do you get your advice from? For every decision you came, some of you say, now the pastor is doing this. What do you think? The guy can't even read his Bible. Emails, question. Then we get our darky friends. I don't know if it happens in the Indian community, but in the black community, this is popular, where people just rock up at your house on a Saturday afternoon. Hey man, we're in the neighborhood. We just thought they'd come and say hi. If that is happening in your life, you need to put some order in your life. So let me show you what happens. Your broke friend comes to visit you on a Saturday afternoon. So from 1 o'clock to 6 o'clock Saturday afternoon, you spend 6 hours with your broke friend having a broke conversation. What a waste of your life. In that 6 hours, you could have read a book and a half. That would have transformed your life. When I say to people, read, they say, I don't have time. What are you doing in the time? I'm spending it with my broke friends. You need to think seriously about, you know, money is not just about, it's what you do with your time. We all have 24 hours. In that 24 hours, George Bezos built a fortune of $160 billion. He's the richest man. In the same 24 hours that you and I have. He did the same mathematics that you did at school. Pi is still 22 over what? Over 7, eh? There is nothing that Bezos knows that you don't know. But it's what he does with his time. He's the founder of Amazon, for those of you who don't know. Yeah. Or George, Jeff, whatever that guy's name. The guy who got divorced now and, you know. See, sometimes you must marry wisely, ladies. I saw someone using an investment graph to show how Jeff Bezos' wife invested, it started from zero, and it moves. They've been married for how long? 30 years, is it? Or 20, 25 years. And in 25 years, she's getting divorced with $60 billion.
Good investment.
Marry wisely, guys. You know, the church pastor say, if you bring a broke guy to my church, you're not getting married in my church. All right, so now, here I'm trying to give you an actual example of how much money you can make by investing in the stock market. What I did is I went actually to Alan Gray and I looked at their actual performance. So what I'm showing you there is a family who invested 100,000 rands with Alan Gray in 1974. Now, of course, in 1974, this would have been an illegal gathering. You don't know what I'm talking about. The younger guys have known, but this is so 1974, 100,000 by the end of the year 2017, that 174 had grown to 2.2 billion or $2 billion. Now, of course, most of you in 1974 didn't have 100,000 because if 100,000 rands in 1974, you were really wealthy. So let me give you a practical example. In 1974, you could have bought a blow punk television set. Okay. Most of you have no clue what I'm talking about, right? The older guys, probably the younger guys in the olden days. The relationship between men and television was very personal. So if you want to change the station, you had to go and turn a button all the way. You remember that thing? Yes. Now that television, I mean, she's 9 years old. She has no idea what I'm talking about because she presses and things happen. Now, if you missed the station, you had to go all the way. You remember that thing? Now, you would have bought that in 1974 for 1,500 rand. Had you put 1,500 rand in an Alan Gray equity fund in 1974, today you'll be sitting at 20 million rands. I mean, one time I'd broken down to a loaf of bread, how much it cost you, and if you put that in the same, you'll be shocked. So what I'm trying to prove here is not how much money you have. What I learned from the village is, it's what you invest your money in. So it's not how much, it's what. If you choose the right investment, and then you just wait. That family, by the way, it's a white family, they swear by Alan Gray. Literally. When I was at Alan Gray, they were still a customer. They bought farms and businesses and all sorts of things from that 100,000. So let's make it more practical for you guys because that one is too far away. Nah, you've been here for too long, so I'll leave that graph. When I come next time, we can talk about the graph. All right. Now, I don't have a pointer. Okay. Can you see this graph? Are you able to see? Do you see the numbers? Good. So all this graph is showing is that if in December 2002, most of you can remember 2002, you could have afforded to buy a BMW, which would cost you 5,000 rands a month. Now you've heard me speak about the important investment. You know it's foolish to buy a car for 5,000 rands a month and you're not putting away 5,000 rands. In other words, you should always put away more than you spend on your car. And that's very difficult for most of us. So you need to find a way of changing that thing. If you're putting away 5,000 rands in the car, you should be putting away, investing 5,000 rands a month. So instead of buying the BMW, you bought yourself a Hyundai Getz, which cost you 2,500 rands a month. Because after all, what do you need? You need a vehicle that will take you from point A to point B. Let's talk about you who's working. You get up in the morning and you get into your car and you drive 10 kilometers to your work and you park your car the whole day and it's losing value while you parked it there. And then in the evening you drive the next 10 kilometers back to the house, you put in the garage and it's losing value while it's there. You're not missing anything. I just wanted to get this. You're not missing anything. By the way, if you haven't sorted out the identity issue, because your identity, if you don't know who you are, then your identity will be in the car you drive. And it will be in the house living. So your identity becomes in things. And if your identity is in things, you are screwed. Can I use that in church? So now, that line here, the red line on the top. So now remember, you could put away 2,500 rands because you've only used that much of your 5,000 rands. You've only used 2.5. So the other 2.5, you're putting it in Alan Gray equity fund. So you're putting 2,500 rands into a unit trust fund for the next 5 years, which is normally the period of your car installment. Isn't it 60 months? It's five years, right? Yeah. So, which means you started in December 2002, which means your 5 years end in December 07. At this point, you have paid your Hyundai Getz, right? It has cost you 150,000 rands, and it's now worth 40. Okay? But you've also been putting 2,500 rands into your Alan Gray unit trust. By December 2007, you now are sitting at 387,000 rands. The first time I worked that thing, I wanted to kick myself I don't know how many times. In other words, at the end of the 5 years, with the same amount that you were spending on your car, you would have had enough money to buy 200 Getz. Do you get the picture?
Yep.
Okay, so at this point, because your mother keeps saying, you know, parents can put you under pressure, right? Because you're driving a Hyundai Getz, and your former classmate, who was not as smart as you are, is driving a Vrupa. You know, our mothers will come home and say, oh, you know, Jerome was at my, passed by my work and he gave me a lift in a BMW. Oh, that car is like a living room. That's pressure. Yeah. Social pressure, yeah. So now finally you say, okay, fine. I'm going to buy my BMW. So you buy your BMW here. Right? And you stop your investment. The beauty of unit trust is that it doesn't lapse. You just leave that 300,000. 5 years later, you're now sitting at R500,000. How many of you could use that money now? Yeah. The average older guys here could have spent R2,500 in an investment in December 2002. Yeah. But unfortunately, you didn't know me, so you chowed the money. Now, some of you are thinking, but Max, R2,500, I didn't have that kind of money. So let's look at the amount that everybody's got. The bottom line here says, if in December 2002, you started putting away 500 rand a month. For 5 years up to here, you've actually put away 35,000 rands in 5 years. And you stopped here and just left that money. You'd now be sitting with 100,000 rands. Now you know. 500 rand, you go to Nando's. It's gone. If this guy here had continued to put the 500 rand right through for the full 10 years, he'd be sitting around 300,000 rands. So what you learn very quickly is that it's not how much money. It's finding the right investment and time. Okay. Now, everybody sitting on average could afford to put away 500 rand a month starting now.
Right.
You can. And my challenge to you, I mean, I'm not a financial advisor and I can't talk about, finances and then be an advisor. Although most people ask me to, I don't want to do that. Because if I talk about it, then I can be impartial. Yeah. But I'm urging you. Go. You can go on Alan Gray's website. You can invest directly. But what my challenge to you is, I want to see who's going to take this. Start at 500 rand a month. And just every month, make sure you put that amount of money away. 10 years from now, you'll be thankful that you came to this meeting. Now, most of us can afford more than 500. So if you can do 1,000, put 1,000 rands a month. The nice thing about unit trust is that if you have a bad month or something, the car broke down and you can't, you just don't have to put money then. It doesn't run away, it doesn't lapse. And when you have money, you can continue again. Now, I say Alan Gray, but you could do that with Stanley, you can do it with anyone who's got a unit trust company. I just know Alan Gray better than any other organization, so I vouch for them. So now, where do we find the money to invest? Because that's an important thing. Remember now, we talked about how you can make more money by engaging your irresistible difference and your talents. Right? You can make more money and finding problems that you can be a solution to. I mean, those of you who are pastors, I don't understand why a pastor is not a speaker. So pastors, write those books. Don't just write Christian books. You have more in your experience than just Christian books. And there's a way of taking the Christian principles and putting it in a way that it becomes palatable for the Muslims, for the Jews, for the atheists. Do you get the picture? So put those principles down, write books, and then use that. So if we start writing books this year, next year, Pastor, we must meet on a circuit somewhere. Do you get the picture? I mean, come on, at 35 rand a pop, 35,000 rands a pop, I mean, come on, who can't use that kind of money? Huh? If you don't want it, you can give it to me. You get the picture? So there's opportunities. So the one thing that I know that everybody here can do is write books. Anyone here can write a book. Anyone. And you know, you don't need anyone to publish it. You self-publish it. And then for pastors, you have a platform anyway. So now when you get invited to go and speak, you take your books with. Then you don't have to say, hey man, pastor is going, you know, those guys don't have money, man. Can you give pastor? No. My good friend, Dr. Clive Gopal in Durban, he does missionary work in India. And apparently what happens in India, when you do missionary work, you pay for everything. Yeah. You pay for the venue, you do whatever. So he is actually paying out of his pocket. That's how much money he has made. Guys, we are broke by choice. So what business can you look into? Look in your own area, in your community. What are the things that are needed in your community? Every time you say someone must do something about it, turn it around and say, I must do something about it. If you have to drive far to get bread, maybe you should start selling bread at your house. If in your area there's no creche, there's no preschool, maybe you should start a preschool in your area. I was in Bloemfontein, and I was speaking in a group of people there, and I was speaking about this part. And this lady left. She's brilliant in mathematics. Now she works for the government, and she doesn't even do stuff that's got to do with mathematics. And I said to her, look, think about this. If you are good in mathematics at school, the number one struggle that our children in Africa is what? Mathematics. Why don't you start a remedial math whatever at home? So these kids come to your house, and you charge whatever, and you teach them mathematics. As I speak now, she turns kids away. She's got too many kids. But she called me one day. She says, you don't understand. I hated my job. My self-esteem had dropped. But now watching these kids, they come here and they have no confidence. Now after a couple of months, look, these kids are flying. The parents are coming to say, wow, you're doing... Suddenly, her whole life has changed. Now she's thinking of writing her own kind of math book that, you know, that goes with whatever she teaches. Are you getting the picture?
Yeah, yeah.
What are you good at? What are you naturally good at that people need? Start doing that. Now, is it easy to start a business? No. But is it easy being poor? No. So, do you want to be in the pain of poverty, or do you want to be in the pain of trying to start? It has taken me 7 years, Pastor, struggling. 7 solid years of living from hand to mouth, doing what I do. It's only now that things are beginning to change. And it's interesting thing is, it's only when the books really came out and people start reading and people start commenting, and then people are, sometimes I'm sitting at home, somebody says, listen man, could you send me X number of your books, and I ship them. And in the other day I was at AfriSam. After I finished speaking, they bought 8,000 rands worth of books. Then I went and spoke somewhere else, they bought 3,000 rands worth of books. I don't know how much you're going to buy, but you know. So the point is, give God something to work with.
Right.
Yes, pray, but you've got to give God something. You've got to be good at something. Notice everybody in the Bible that God used was good at something. Daniel was an excellent administrator. Joseph was brilliant. The Hebrew boys were known for their work. So sharpen the skills, the talents that God has given you. Then deploy them. As you do that, ask God to bless the work of your hands.
Sure. Correct.
This thing of miracles. Hey. Miracles are not good for you. Honestly, miracles are not good for you, and I'll tell you why. When you do something and you get a reward for it, what does it do to your self-esteem? You believe you can do more.
Yeah.
Now, if Pastor didn't prepare for his sermons and God just gave him sermons, he doesn't read, you think, no, he'll never be good at anything. Because the day God keeps quiet, there's no church. And you know God is notorious for being quiet.
Right.
So that is moody. But because, honestly, any successful pastor, the success comes from reading. When pastors, and I send books through Jerome to the pastor, two of my books to him. Since I received the books that I haven't read them, I didn't even feel bad. Because I understand the amount of reading that pastors do. You can't preach, man, if you don't read. You can't. Every Sunday. Now, man, you're going to run out of things to say. You're going to sound like a stuck record. So you got to read and read. So guys, from this day forward, you wake up every day, spend some time sharpening your skills. Now this is a simple thing. If you read on a subject for 30 minutes every day for 5 years, you become an expert in that field.
Right.
Just 30 minutes. The average person stopped reading the day they graduated. And you read the prescribed books. Now it's a challenge to live life. Now you look at South Africa. We have so many problems. If you live in a country with problems, it's full of opportunities. Right. Because if you can bring a solution to those problems.
Yes.
Now people are running away to Australia. They're going to places where there are no problems. You can't make money where there's no problem. Business is born whenever a solution to a problem is what? discovered. So what, one simple thing, what does this church need that you can provide and the church can pay for? My favorite is these guys who sit on these things. The church has got some of those laziest musicians that we come across. You're all being traumatized. What was those guys in New Zealand? Is it New Zealand? What is the Australian group? What is it called?
Hillsong.
We're traumatized by Hillsong. Traumatic. Are you telling me that in this church we don't have people who are gifted to write music?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
Why are the Australians not buying music from Gilgal Ministries? You sit here, you're broke. You're fasting. Get off your fast. Start writing some music. If you don't do it, one day God is going to clap you. You will lose that job. And the only thing you have will be what? I created you to do music. You are busy, frustrated at the bank with some boss who just doesn't respect you. Guys, is it hard? It's not easy. It's not what?
Easy.
If you want easy, die. Life is not easy. So don't waste your pain. Every church should have its own music produced by its own people.
Yes.
Then what we do now is when I want music, new music, I come and visit here. When I leave with CDs that I can take to my church and say, listen to these guys. And when I come here, I say, okay, guys, thanks for your music. Here's what the guys in my church are doing. Then the world of worship will change. I'm tired of one part harmony from Hillsong. I come from Africa. We got melody. Everybody's reproducing what somebody has done. The church in Africa needs to start influencing the church outside of Africa.
Yes.
It cannot be that what we export is come on, fire, fire. I'm fire. I want. Let me leave that one.